You're listening to Things They Don't Tell Her. Everything you don't get taught about periods, pregnancy, and postpartum. I'm going to take you on a journey back to sex ed and teach you what really matters. Ladies, it's time you felt empowered in your bodies. I'm your host, Caitlin Pender, founder of Her Women's Health, and I'm sharing tips to optimize your fertility, pregnancy, and postpartum journey. Good afternoon, listeners. In today's interview, I am joined by the beautiful Megan, a qualified clinical nutritionist, mother of a beautiful toddler, and currently in her third trimester. In fact, currently 37 weeks.
Yes, so almost 38.
So definitely at the pointy end of her pregnancy. Megan has a particular interest in pre and postnatal nutrition and ways to support new mothers in breastfeeding and their postpartum recovery. She's the founder of Maternal Essentials, a whole food nutrient-rich supplement aimed to support overall well-being of the breastfeeding mother. Thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today, Megan.
That's all right. Thanks for having me.
No worries. So to start off today's show, can you share a little bit about your own postpartum journey and how you became so passionate about postpartum recovery in terms of nutrition and breastfeeding?
Well, I think first of all, with my daughter, I was seeing a lot of women in clinic while I was pregnant and seeing postpartum, I guess, depletion, not necessarily in that first 4 to 6 weeks where everyone classifies it as postpartum, but mums with 5-year-olds, 8-year-olds, and even teenagers just absolutely just depleted. Obviously, as your children age, you're going to have other factors that come up that influence our nutrition needs and different stages of life. But it came very, very apparent to me that first sort of 4 to 6 weeks of supporting your body is essential to make sure that you are giving your body the nourishment that it deserves to recover from not only pregnancy, but also fertility. If there was any trying to conceive or IVF, everything like that. If you've had period issues before in the past, going through birth and then coming into breastfeeding, if you are breastfeeding, it's quite full on. So making sure you have that nourishment. Yeah.
And so what were the things that you did to support yourself in that postpartum period with your first?
So with my first, with Opal, I did a lot of meal prep. So I cooked a lot of slow cooked meals and I prioritized those iron rich foods. So I did a lot of slow cooked lamb, a lot of slow cooked beef. I did a lot of soups and things. And from growing up in Hong Kong as well, I used a lot of Chinese medicine as well. So I think that it can be very specific for some people. Some mums don't really know much about it or don't use a lot of it. And it doesn't make your postpartum experience more or less if you use it, but I just found that utilizing medicine that I had grown up with really helped support me through that journey. So using things like goji berries, red dates, things like that. And mum brought over a whole heap of herbs and things that were brewed into teas and soups, and I really dove deep more into the traditional, I guess, postpartum healing practices, which is not only really interesting if anyone does want to go up and have a look on anything from like traditional Chinese to Japanese to India to a lot of Southeast Asia as well. It's just amazing the practices and foods and healing traditions that they have. I guess that's sort of, what I did and how I supported myself.
Can you share some of those practices from traditional Chinese medicine and from your research into these other cultures?
Yeah, so in traditional Chinese medicine, they have that sort of confinement period that they use, and I did that quite specifically. I didn't do it, I guess, as they did back in the olden days, where they literally didn't leave the house, they didn't shower, they like rugged themselves up really warm because it was December when I had Opal, so we couldn't really rug ourselves up too warm. But I use a lot of acupuncture, a lot of moxa, which is heating like a mugwort stick and warming the body that way, a lot of warming foods and supportive Chinese herbs and things. Other traditional cultures use like belly binding. So mm-hmm. I did some belly binding with that, gentle walking as well. A lot of hot foods. So like ghee is a big one in Ayurvedic medicine mm-hmm. as well. And I probably had a seaweed soup every day, which is traditionally used in Korean postpartum practices. So they use seaweed and usually like a beef bone broth stock with like added beef, and sometimes they add egg into it. So I had one of those a day, and they traditionally see that to help promote like milk supply and nourishment and recovery. From a nutrition standpoint, seaweed's very, very high in iodine, so very, very good for postpartum recovery as well, and for postpartum thyroid health.
Do you see, have you seen much postpartum thyroid dysfunction?
Yeah, and particularly coming into the third trimester, actually seeing the thyroid swing in that third trimester prior to giving birth, and then immediately sort of after. There's just so many hormonal factors that will influence it. Even if you haven't had a thyroid condition before in the past, it's what I always say to mums, is to make sure that you get your thyroid checked, because it is something that is so often overlooked, and the doctors mm-hmm. will say that it's fine, it's fine, it's fine, until it's not fine. And then you're in a rabbit hole trying to dig yourself out and support your thyroid health. So it is something I see a lot in clinic.
Yeah, it's a fascinating time. I think in the last 5 years, there's been a lot more evidence to support the connection between thyroid health and our hormones, which is just fascinating.
Yeah, and the thyroid regulates everything, not from just from our mood to our menstrual cycle to our hair growth, so postpartum hair loss, even though obviously implicated with iron and zinc deficiency, but also with your thyroid. If your thyroid's not working properly, your hair's not going to be able to grow. And wow. Yeah, so it's a very important one to make sure that you are getting checked.
Yeah, so on that note, what are some common nutrient deficiencies that you tend to see as a nutritionist, and what are the signs? So you went through some just then, but could you go through more specifically each of the deficiencies and what common signs or symptoms you might have associated with those?
Yeah, so iron is probably, on a blood test, I guess, iron and zinc would be big deficiencies that you'll be able to actually measure in terms of pathology reports. So iron can be anything from really low fatigue, poor concentration. You can feel dizziness. You can get very lightheaded when you stand up, and obviously just excessively tired than what you would normally be, or you're forgetting things as well. Mm-hmm. Iron deficiency is also common if you were iron deficient during pregnancy. And then if you had quite a lot of blood loss at birth as well. So very, very important to make sure that you're getting your iron levels checked. Same with the zinc. Zinc is one that I see quite commonly as well. Zinc, low levels of zinc is implicated in postnatal depression and anxiety. So that's one that I do like to make sure that mums have an adequate store, just to help support them going into the postpartum period. So I'd normally like to check it in the third trimester, just to make sure that it is optimal, because it is one of those protective factors that can make sure that mum going into postpartum can just be a little bit more supported in terms of that baseline nourishment to prevent any sort of mood disorders like postnatal depression, anxiety as well. Vitamin D is a big one as well. Like, as Australia, we have so much sunshine, but we're one of the most vitamin D deficient countries in the world. So vitamin D, I like to see it about 100 plus on a blood test. Doctors usually will say that you're fine at about 50. And vitamin D is another big one for mood and supporting postpartum depression and anxiety. So I would definitely recommend to get all those levels tested. Normally, like with the zinc deficiency, you can get some taste changes. You can notice quite brittle nails. You can sometimes notice some like white spots on your nails as well. And then with vitamin D as well, if you've got any like excess, I guess, anxiety, or you're struggling to cope a little bit as well, or you're constantly sick, that can be an indicator of a low vitamin D status as well. They're usually the ones that you can measure for. But in terms of general deficiencies that you will see in terms of looking at like a dietary analysis when a mum comes in, particularly for the breastfeeding mum, calcium is a big one that I see, whether they eat dairy or not. It is ridiculously hard to get the calcium requirements that the dietary guidelines have set out. So unless you're drinking like 3 glasses of milk a day, some cheese, yogurt, ice cream, like nobody eats that. As far as I'm aware, I do consume dairy, but I don't ever drink that much like milk or anything like that. And there's lots of other dietary factors that inhibit calcium absorption. There's other things like time as well. Mums sometimes just don't have the time to eat, so they're not going to be able to eat enough of these calcium rich sources as well. So that's why I think calcium is a big one that is important, particularly as women, as we get older, we have to be more careful with what we consume to prevent things like osteoporosis as well.
Yeah, it's so interesting. You mentioned the postpartum anxiety and depression and the links to these specific nutrient deficiencies. I think so often all of these symptoms like postnatal hair loss and memory loss and fatigue and anxiety and stress are all sort of brushed under the rug as just a common part of becoming a mother. And it's so important to hear you talk about the fact that these can be linked to really specific deficiencies.
Yeah, it's extremely interesting as well. And during study, obviously I'm doing research specifically in postpartum depression now, and just going through some of the research where it's mums won't actually reach out for help because they think that, or they've been told that what they're experiencing is normal. It's meant to be what you should be experiencing postpartum. Yes, you're going to be more sleep deprived. Yes, you're going to have a lack of energy. Yes, you can expect hormone changes and some mood changes. But if it's anything out of the ordinary and you are really struggling to cope, you need to reach out, because that's the biggest protective factor to make sure you get the support and that community around you when you need it for postpartum depression and anxiety, because everyone's just telling you, oh, it's fine, it's normal, it'll go away, when that's just not the case. But yeah.
As a newborn mother, it would be very hard to distinguish that line of, am I just tired and fatigued because I'm sleep deprived, or is there something more going on?
Yeah, and it can be really tricky. And some mums as well, they don't want to reach out for help because they're not, there's almost this society pressure that it's like, well, you're not meant to be upset. You're not meant to be anxious. Like you have your baby, you're meant to be happy. So they're not, they feel almost guilty in reaching out for help because, oh, I'm not meant to feel like this. But postnatal depression is quite common in Australia. If anything, it's more underreported than what the statistics do show, because so many mums don't actually reach out and ask for help.
And what are the statistics at the moment?
Off the top of my head, I believe it is 1 in 7.
Yeah,
wow. Let me just double. I think it's 1 in 7 mothers. I will fact check that though. I'm just pulling up my research draft now, I will say.
Let's go with 1 in 7.
Yeah, I think it's it's estimated to affect 6 to 17% of Australian mothers, and that was in 2010.
Wow.
So the rates have probably most likely increased since then.
And so do you recommend women start assessing things in pregnancy in order to prevent these things?
Definitely as well. And the other thing that gets overlooked is obviously depression and anxiety during pregnancy as well. So if you're experiencing symptoms of depression and anxiety in pregnancy, it's important to reach out and get screened by your midwife or your GP or primary health provider, so they can put in supportive mechanisms and a structure in place to reduce your risk going postnatally as well. So it's definitely things that need to be assessed during pregnancy.
And would you recommend, from a nutrition perspective, regular blood tests or working with a nutritionist?
Yes, definitely. And each trimester will bring around a different set of nutrient requirements as well. So normally the first trimester, hopefully you don't have any morning sickness or any horrible throwing up, but that has a very specific nutrient focus, similar to the second trimester and third trimester. So your body goes through these different waves where you require different nutrients. So your first trimester, you really want to focus on choline, iodine, and your folic acid or folate. Coming into your second, that's when you want to start boosting up more of your iron and your DHA from like omega-3s. And then going into your third trimester, that's where you would really be looking into making sure your zinc, your vitamin D status are optimal, your iron, your hemoglobin levels are optimal as well to go into birth as well.
Awesome. And so through real food, can you give examples of foods that are high in each of the things you mentioned? So
zinc. Yeah, so iron, that would be red meat is a big one. Liver is really great. If you don't eat meat, then things like your leafy greens, but make sure you are cooking them. Your legumes as well, make sure you're cooking them. So even if they're just out of the tin, I still always recommend to cook them because they are easier to digest and they make the iron more bioavailable as well. Molasses is a really great one. So I like to add like a tablespoon of molasses into like some lemon juice, or you can add it into tea or even like cooking and things like that. Yeah. But that's a really great source of iron. Vitamin D is a little bit harder to get in food, but it's mainly, particularly if you are plant-based, but mainly it's like your grass-fed butter, liver, fish, eggs, dairy products. But I do recommend sunshine and or a vitamin D supplement if you are deficient. Your DHA, so from your omega-3, so that's things like seaweed and seafood will be your best option for that. So fatty fish, particularly your salmon and sardines. So they're your two ones. You really don't want to have too much tuna. You don't really want to have more than a tin of tuna a week just because it's quite high in mercury. And that will reduce your level of iron and also bind to zinc and vitamin D and things like that. So you don't want to have too much mercury floating around your bloodstream.
Salmon and sardines.
Salmon and sardines are great. So I try to get all my clients to eat that. So I get really, really happy when someone's like, oh, I love sardines. I'm like, yes, that's a win for me. things like calcium, obviously your dairy sources as well, but things like tahini, almonds, dried apricots, dried figs as well. They're a good source of calcium, sesame seeds. Yeah.
Wow, so many sources of calcium I wouldn't have realized.
You do have to have a lot more of the plant-based ones, so you do have to be mindful. So that's why I do say if you are plant-based, it is recommended, particularly if you are breastfeeding on top of that, to have a calcium supplement. And if you're using a plant-based milk, make sure it's been fortified with calcium, because some of them haven't been. So it is really important that you do have the ones that are at least 250 to 300 milligrams fortified with calcium, and it'll just say it on the nutrient panel on the back. But that's the best way to make sure that you aren't going to be lacking in the calcium.
And what about, what did you mention in the beginning, choline and folic acid or folate?
Yeah, so folate is all like your leafy greens, so just like a bunch of veggies, fruit as well. And your choline will be like eggs are your best source, but you can also get it from fatty fish. You can get it from beans as well. Yeah.
And there was one other thing, zinc, I think you mentioned.
Zinc, yes. So zinc, oysters, but obviously you can't eat raw oysters while you're pregnant, but you can eat smoked oysters, and they're also high in iron. So they work quite well together. Red meat and your nuts and seeds.
Yeah. And with it, so... because I know in some Japanese cultures they do still eat raw fish and oysters in pregnancy.
Yeah.
So what's your thoughts on?
I think that if you're going to your like local sushi store, but it's you don't really know the good quality of it, I would definitely sort of avoid it. And if on a regular basis, I would make sure not to be eating like the raw fish and things like that. It is the food safety standards we have here in Australia are very, very high. So in terms of things more so like your deli meats and like cheeses and things that are saying don't eat during pregnancy. The cheese, the soft cheeses that we have here in Australia, pardon me, they've all been pasteurized. So the milk that they use in those soft cheeses have been pasteurized. The issue is that if you're, say, at a wedding or a baby shower and the cheese has been left out all day and it's been in the sun and other people are touching it, that's where the risk of contamination comes in. Same with like pre-cut fruit and veggies. If you don't know how it's been stored or how it's been handled, that's the main issue. But if you were going to come home, chop up some watermelon, leave it in the fridge for a couple of days, that's going to be okay because you know how you prepare and store your own food. I personally wouldn't eat oysters during, like, raw oysters during pregnancy. However, I have had like the aburi salmon where they like slightly grill it on top so it is a little bit more cooked, or you can just avoid it. But it's completely up to you and what you feel comfortable with. I would never recommend someone to do something they don't feel comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is because there can be a slight risk to bacterial infection as well. So you do what you think is comfortable for you. The recommendations isn't to eat anything raw, but they also say you can't have any ham. So that means like no ham and cheese toasties, no anything like that. And then when you do look at different cultures like Japan, they don't change what they eat. Their diet is largely based on seafood. Mm-hmm. And raw meats. There's some cultures where they do eat a lot of like raw red meat and things like that as well. So but then again, if we don't have access to food that's been prepared and handled in a safe way, then like I wouldn't just be going to your local sushi store and getting the sashimi pack that's been in there since 7 a.m. kind of thing. I would definitely sort of advise against that.
Mm-hmm. But if you'd say caught the fish and gilled it, and
I think it's completely up to you. I still in that sense would lightly grill it, like I still would cook it in a sense, same like when I go to a sushi restaurant, I will always get the grilled salmon while I'm pregnant, as much as I'd love to eat the big sashimi platter, I don't. Mm-hmm. And things like with ham and like your deli meats and things, like if I want a ham and cheese toastie, you're cooking the ham when you press it, so it's not necessarily, the heat will be cooking some of that bacteria as well. It's mainly about food preparation, how you're handling the food. If you're going somewhere where you're getting like alarm bells, where you're like, oh, maybe I should just buy something in a packet. Just buy something in a packet. Don't eat what's been left over on the counter.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can do sort of like, I guess, what you feel comfortable. Some women drink, you know, coffee while they're pregnant. Others will not touch anything and will follow everything to a T. But I drink coffee while I'm pregnant. It's 200 milligrams you can have a day. Some women it's a big no-no, some are fine with it. So it's really, I guess, an individual perspective.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so how are you at the moment preparing for your fourth trimester?
To be honest, not as well as I was with my first daughter. So I am finding this time I would have already had like all my meals prepped. I had a whole chest freezer full of like soups and stews and everything. I had like little baskets around the house with like breastfeeding essentials and everything. I had all her clothes washed. So this time I don't really have all of that. I have the items. I just haven't sort of put them together.
Mm-hmm.
So not as well as I'd like to, but I have all my supplements and everything that I know that I will need. They're just not necessarily prepared as I would like them to be. So I do have a list of things to do, hopefully before baby boy comes. So I'm just going to stock up on lots of bone broths, and I've got an order in at the butcher at the moment for some like oxtail and lamb shanks and liver and things like that. So I'll be picking that up. So at least I have that there that it can be cooked down into yummy meals and things.
Beautiful. So what sort of meals would you recommend, and what do you plan to cook postpartum?
So I'll be cooking a lot of slow cooked meats, mainly anything slow cooked. Slow cooked is best for our digestion. Whether you are postpartum, whether you have IBS, whether you have any sort of tummy issues, raw is not great for our digestion. So that's slow cooked as well. Be very, very gentle. Your tummy is already a bit iffy postpartum as it is, and if you're struggling with postpartum constipation, it's a lot easier to move through as well. So slow cooked meats, I love like oxtail stew, lamb shanks, any sort of like beef cheek, any of your gelatinous cuts of meat are really, really great. And cutting in liver into that as well, or adding in some molasses, lots of veggie soups as well to get that fiber in to help make sure you are going regularly to the toilet, because postpartum constipation is not fun, and you want to make sure that you are going regularly to the toilet. Yeah, so that those things are really important. Lots of like smoothies and things as well, because you can get extra fiber in through smoothies, and a lot of antioxidant rich foods like your berries as well, and that can help to reduce inflammation. Lots of healthy fats, so things like ghee. I've got about 2 massive containers of ghee. I mean, I'll most definitely go through all of them, and just basically adding it on top of oats or cooking eggs in it, just adding it to all the meals, because ghee is a really good source of vitamin A and D. Amazing. As well. Yeah.
Beautiful. And can you go through, so this, you've got your maternal essential supplement, which is to support the breastfeeding mother.
Yes.
How did you decide on the individual items that you put into that supplement? And can you go through some of the things that you put in there?
Yeah. So I was very much in clinic seeing breastfeeding mums with like a low milk supply. And then looking at what they're eating, they're not actually getting the nutrition that they need to sustain themselves and a milk supply. So it's not necessarily if you eat these lactation cookies, or if you just have lots of fenugreek or lots of fennel or blessed thistle or just add brewer's yeast, that you're magically going to get a huge milk supply. Like, it doesn't work that way. They can be very, very supportive, but if you don't have that basic nutrition underpinning to actually nourish your body and give you the calories and the energy that your body needs to make breast milk, your body's not going to be able to produce enough. So I was very adamant that I did want it to be a higher energy food as well. So I was very specific with the protein that I wanted in there as well, to also help with postpartum recovery, but it also helps just with our energy and mood, and will help give that little boost to mums that they need. So we did collagen and hemp. Collagen is very, very easy to digest. Same with hemp protein. It's the less likely I have found in clinic that to cause like bloating out of all like your plant-based proteins. I find that sometimes pea protein can cause a little bit of gas. Mm-hmm. So hemp is quite gentle in the tummy. And then I wanted to fortify it with all your other nutrients. So calcium, as I have probably banged on a lot during this episode, is super important. So we put calcium in there as well. Again, just to support that calcium intake, knowing that breastfeeding mums probably not going to be getting enough calcium as they need. And then if you're mixing that in with either like a normal dairy-based milk or say like a fortified plant-based milk, you're going to be, you would get well over half of the recommended dietary intake of calcium. So literally just like one serve of that with the fortified plant-based milk, you're going to be already on your way to meet your needs. The berries that we used, strawberry, goji berries, blackberries, they were specifically one for the flavor to make it taste super yummy, but also they're high in antioxidants. They have really great anti-inflammatory properties, and they just help to sort of calm everything down as well. And we also added an MCT oil in there for one, the healthy fat component to help support with memory and concentration, but it will also help to give the mum the energy that she needs. So MCT oil.
What is MCT oil?
MCT oil is medium chain triglycerides. It's typically from coconut.
Mm-hmm.
So from coconut oil, and it's a specific component of it that's been broken down, and it's really great for energy, for mental clarity, and boosting up that healthy fat profile as well. So I was like, yeah, we need to have that in there, because it will be not only giving the mum the energy that she needs, but also working on that mum brain that's all too common postpartum as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, we do have our galactologs in there obviously as well. So there is fenugreek, blessed thistle, fennel, nettle, and brewer's yeast in there as well. But combined with the other nutrients, it's a more supportive, wholesome formula rather than just drinking like a breastfeeding tea in and of itself, because you're getting a full meal that will support not only mum and her nutrition needs, but also to make sure that that milk supply can get really nourished and full.
Yeah. And can you just, for the listeners, go through what a galactagogue is?
Yeah. So a galactagogue is anything that basically will help to produce milk. So that basically it works, some work specifically with hormones to help produce more milk, like prolactin is our biggest hormone that will help for us to produce milk. And galactagogues have been used traditionally for thousands of years to basically help support the milk supply of mums. So you'll get things like your herbs, so fenugreek, fennel, and I also recommend eating them as well. So like actually adding them into curries. I love roasted fennel with salmon. Like I feel like that's such a beautiful meal, and fennel as a vegetable in and of itself often gets forgotten about.
It does.
It's super, super tasty. So I recommend like roasting that up with some like olive oil and sea salt. So tasty.
Wow. I've never done that. I'm going to give that a try.
Yeah. It's lovely. And then like blessed thistle is a big one that you commonly will see in either like a liquid form or it's herbal like tea form. Mm-hmm. And then brewer's yeast, I think, is the other really big one that you'll see a lot added into like cookies and things. But brewer's yeast is a good source of B vitamins as well, which will help with your energy. So it kind of does two things.
Yeah. And the benefit of having it in a supplement is when you are a postpartum mum and you don't necessarily have the time to make these beautiful, nourishing meals, which maybe once our community provided, and the mother-in-laws and like so many traditional cultures that they go home and they have family cook for them. We don't necessarily have that set up in our Western culture. So,
and I think as well, the more children that you have, this might not be true for everyone, but potentially the less support that you get, because they, well, people perceive like, oh, we've already had one kid, so you'll be fine. Like, well, we don't really need to do anything as much. So they're less likely, I think, to be willing to go out of their way to say like bring a meal over or things like that, particularly because they're like, well, you've already got one, you'll be fine. Like there's no, but you could be really struggling, because I think that pressure of having to, and having to not only just look after yourself, but you're now feeding a toddler or older child and making all their meals, and then you're trying to feed baby, and then you're trying to feed yourself as well, if anything, that can be just as overwhelming as having one. So having something that you can just mix up in like coconut milk is what we did our nutrient panel on, because we didn't want to do it with dairy, because a lot of breastfeeding mums, they will exclude dairy and things from their diet. Same with gluten. So our product is dairy and gluten free, because it can cause some tummy upsets and bub. But you can literally just mix it in with coconut milk or any milk that you want, really. Shake it up and drink it like as you would a protein shake after the gym, and at least you'll be getting a solid form of nutrition before you can go on to like sort of eat your next meal if you're rushing around frantically trying to figure out something to do.
Beautiful. Yeah, we'll definitely share in the show notes a link to the supplement for all of our listening postpartum or pregnant mothers. Is it safe to have in pregnancy?
It is, we would recommend having it more so in the third trimester, particularly if you're going to be antenatal expressing, so for your colostrum as well. So particularly if you're not breastfeeding already and you're pregnant, so you're planning on like tandem feeding, or you're still nursing your toddler and pregnant, you can have that during that time. We wouldn't recommend as high a dose, because you're already producing milk. It'd be more just to top up your nutrient support. But if you are a first-time mum and you want to express colostrum and you want to try breastfeeding and you really want to give it a go, then this can help sort of from 35, 36 weeks onward, or whenever your midwife has suggested to start expressing colostrum. And you can just take, you know, 1 to 2 tablespoons a day just to help with that as well.
Beautiful. Yeah. And is it all whole food?
It is all whole food. We do have our minerals that we use aren't from like whole food. So we don't use like like some companies will use coral calcium, which is whole food. So we use the minerals that we use are the actual minerals. But like our iron is from nettle, so it's not going to constipate you. And our iodine is from kelp. So they're the two ones that are whole food. And then everything else is like your berries, your hemp and your collagen, and then your minerals have just been added in.
Beautiful. All right. And just one final thing. So What other tips would you have for nutritional support long term for the postpartum mother who is potentially breastfeeding, but maybe not breastfeeding, but sort of ongoing support? Obviously, there's so much emphasis around that first 40 days, but what recommendations would you have for those women that you were seeing sort of later down the track and how they can support themselves?
The biggest thing I see is to make sure you're having protein with every meal. That is whether you're adding in a protein powder to your oats, or you're having, instead of just having a plain piece of toast with honey on it, you need to add some sort of peanut butter or nut butter to boost it up, or have some eggs on the side. Protein is one of those nutrients that they don't just necessarily just make our muscles all like big and strong, but it's so important for our mental health. It's important for recovery, for energy, for blood sugar balance. It's also essential for thyroid health. And when you're missing out protein, you're missing out on supporting and nourishing your body through that. So even in terms, if you're feeling really depleted and you're getting these constant drops in energy throughout the day, you may think it's iron, which it could definitely be an iron deficiency, but it could also be that you're not having your blood sugar regulated because you're not getting enough protein as well. That would be a really, really big one for me. Another one would be, don't put too much pressure on yourself. Like, don't try and think that when you're going food shopping to get all the healthy food and set all the best intentions, because when you get home, or if you're having a really struggle, you're struggling, you're not going to, the last thing you want to do is cut up some celery sticks and eat it with hummus. Like, that is great. But there's going to be days where you won't be able to do that. And then I see moms feeling guilty because they haven't been able to have this quote unquote perfect healthy diet that's filled with vegetables and fruits and things like that. So being really realistic that some days aren't going to look as good as other days. And it's more about the accumulative effect of your diet that you have over the week, over the months and over the years, rather than what you're eating on like a day-to-day meal-to-meal basis. So being a little bit more realistic, not judging yourself on what you see other people on social media as well. Like, that can be really tricky. You're seeing all these Instagram, TikTok vlogs of people eating perfect meals and mums that seemingly are able to make all these beautiful home-cooked meals all the time. And it can be really overwhelming when you're like, well, I've got nothing to eat tonight, so we're just going to have baked beans on toast. That's okay. Baked beans are a source of protein. They're a good source of fiber. If you say have time on the weekend and you're like, maybe I'm going to make some homemade baked beans. So you could have that in the freezer and you can do things like that. So you can grab meals out quickly, so you're not necessarily feeling guilty every time you have to do a quick meal. They would be my two biggest ones.
Amazing. Do you have any tips that you wish you'd known with your first pregnancy or with your first postpartum period that you're more aware of this time around?
Eat more fiber. I struggled really badly with postpartum constipation with my first. It didn't help that obviously I had horrible afterbirth contractions as well. So I was on pain medication, which didn't actually help because that will slow down your bowel transit time. But then I don't think I was eating enough fiber. I was eating a lot of like slow cooked foods, but I wasn't necessarily getting the foliage that I needed to help support everything and staying hydrated as well. So this time I'm going to be really adamant on making sure I am getting enough fiber, and utilizing things like stewed apples, pears, prunes. If you are able to get more of like a herbal based tincture for like afterbirth cramps and pains to be a little bit more supportive, or using heat packs and things, that's what I'm going to be doing this time, because I know they say that afterbirth contractions get worse with each baby, which is great. So just using things that are not going to, I guess, slow up your bowel transit time so you can go regularly, because that is just very, very uncomfortable. You're already recovering from giving birth. Don't want to be struggling to go to the toilet. Like, it's already scary enough as it is, but that would be my biggest advice.
Yeah. And as a pelvic floor physio, it's probably one of the most important things to minimize constipation in that postpartum period.
Yeah. And I think it gets definitely overlooked and not talked about much. Whereas I spend a lot of consults just talking about poo all day with my clients. So It is a very normal thing and thing that needs to be, I guess, normalized, because when you're in there and you have no idea why it's happening to you and you're in extreme pain, just having those little tips to support bowel health is really, really important.
Absolutely. And I think knowing what a healthy poo is.
Yes. Yeah. 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 Look up the Bristol stool chart. That will.
A slippery sausage.
Yes. Yeah. That's a good poo.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time and for joining us today. And I will leave a few of those recommendations in our show notes and a link to your website and your supplement. But thank you so much for going through so many tips for both pregnant and postpartum women in how they can support themselves through diet and nutrition.
That's okay. We've also got free, we've got a free breastfeeding and pregnancy nutrition guide on our website as well. So that's, yeah, I've got recipes and just little nutrition tips and everything on there as well.
Beautiful. Yes, I'll share that as well. Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Don't forget to subscribe and share this with other pregnant women or other women that you think deserve to understand this information. It is my mission to share this knowledge with women because this is something that I believe that we should all be taught.